Today's session is a HERC Q&A, Trying to Understand Choice Data. Our presenters for today, our first presenter today is Dr. Todd Wagner. He's the director of the VA Health Economics Resource Center and the associate director for the Center for Innovation to Implementation at the Palo Alto VA. He's joined by Dr. Megan Bannerman. She's a postdoctoral fellow, Health Services Research at the Center for Innovation to Implementation, the VA Palo Alto Healthcare System, and the Center for Health Policy, Primary Care, and Outcomes Research at the Stanford University School of Medicine. They will be joined during the Q&A discussion by Dr. Amy Rosen. She is a VA Senior Research Career Scientist with the Center for Healthcare Organization and Implementation Research at the VA Boston Healthcare System, and she is a professor at the Boston University School of Medicine in the Department of Surgery.
Thank you so much. And I should note that Megan is no longer out in Palo Alto. She was wooed away by the University of Utah in Salt Lake City, VA, so she's an investigator there. So we're thrilled to have her here. So the real goal here, so just this is going to be a little bit different than some of our cyber seminars, in part because we've just been starting to scratch the choice data, and it's easy to get lost in the choice data. So in some sense, this is our effort at providing some breadcrumbs to not only ourselves but to you to help you see where we've gone and errors that we've made, but then to enable a broader discussion among the research community about how to use these data. And I think we're going to be, for those of us who are interested in these data, we're going to have to rely on each other to figure this out and sort of put the broader sense of the data together. So about halfway through the talk today, we're going to open the floor, which is the sort of novelty, and Heidi's going to be helping us on that so that you can ask questions verbally. And like I said, I don't pretend to have all the answers here, but hopefully we can get things rolling. Okay, so just to get some background and some acknowledgments out of the way, so we call ourselves the PABSICLE team. This is the Palo Alto, Boston, Salt Lake City team. So it includes Jeannie Lowe, who's a fantastic programmer here, Ki Chen, Michael Schwartz, Warren Petty, Bill O'Brien, and Ying Suo. And we've been working, we have weekly calls with the Office of Community Care, including Amanda Barnes, Leo Greenstone, we just had a brief call with him an hour ago, Cameron Matthews, Mark Upton, and I'm sure I'm missing many other folks that are involved in those calls. I think the last email had about 30 people on the email. We have talked to folks at VIREC, so Denise Hines, Amanda Taylor, and Lucy Zhang are also working with choice data. We had discussed whether to include them in this discussion. They are doing some different methods than we're doing, and I think that they will have a future cyber seminar on this. So they are planning that, but we have definitely benefited from their input. And then, I just want to say, if we make any errors here, it's really our missteps. It's not Office of Community Care or VHA, and if we say anything stupid, that's our own mistake or my mistake. It's not Megan's or Amy's. So we had some objectives, and I just want to give you some background for those of you who are new to community care. I would say that there is considerable interest in analyzing choice data. If you're not familiar with the Choice Act that was passed years ago, which really opened the door for how veterans are using the VA but also community services. And this work is providing a starting point for understanding how these data can be used in analyses and how to work with them to figure out what veterans are doing outside of VA. This really is a work in progress, and I think, as I said earlier, crowdsourcing will be important for us all moving forward. So just to give you a brief agenda of where we're headed, we're going to give you just a couple-slide overview on the Veterans Choice Act. We'll be specifically talking about a couple different data sources. These VACA data tables that you can see in the CDW, the fee and fee-basis claim system data. Megan's going to be talking mostly about that. And then we're going to talk briefly about the performance integrity tool data, mostly not in length because we haven't accessed it yet. But that clearly is where a number of data points are in the near future or currently. And then we'll follow by a Q&A. So if you're not familiar, Congress allocated $10 billion in fiscal years 2015 through 2016 for the Veterans Choice Program. This $10 billion, most people think it was just to buy care on the outside. It wasn't strictly for that. There were some efforts to improve access within VA, so additional hiring, working and having clinics working on weekends, so there was efforts there as well. But there was clearly an effort to pay for veterans to receive care outside of VHA. Eligibility when the Veterans Choice Program was implemented was based on two features, and they could be either or. One was a wait time feature. So let's say you had to wait more than 30 days for care that you needed, you were then eligible for Veterans Choice to go into the community. The other one was what was considered a mileage hardship. So if you lived far away from a VA, you were then eligible to get services from the community as well. I should note, for those of you who are either new to VA or haven't been paying that much attention to it, VA traditionally has been spending about 10% of its budget pre-2014 on purchase care. And this existed, this has gone on for years, and these were typically things that were authorized, pre-authorized, and for things where the person was at home, let's just say it was, they needed home oxygen for their connected illness. And so we would purchase that, and that would be delivered to their home. And there were some other things in the traditional fee program that existed, but what happened after 2015 was really the ballooning of the Veterans Choice Program and a lot more services outside. Now, you can think from a health services researcher perspective why the Veterans Choice Program could be bad or good. And we remain rather agnostic about this. One is if you're predominantly interested in access and coverage, you could say, wow, this could be a real boon to veterans now that they can access services much closer to their home if they live far away, or if, faster access if they have a wait time. But keep in mind that since 1993, the VA has this VISTA electronic medical record. So if you show up in Gainesville VA or if you show up at the Palo Alto VA, the physicians can see your records and can figure out exactly what happened to you, know what medications the VA has prescribed you, and so forth. So there's a belief that there's a fair amount of care coordination happening in the VA. And if you start using non-VA services, there's a concern about fragmentation and how that communication happens. So I'm a member of Kaiser, which is an integrated network, and they have an electronic medical record. But just the same as VA, if I use a non-Kaiser member, they really can't see what's going on, and they struggle to coordinate my care if I need it. So as you think about these pros and cons, it might have different effects on different people, and different types of services might really matter. And it might also depend on the vulnerability of the patient. Some patients might be really good at coordinating their own care, where other patients are really relying on the system to coordinate it for them. So we have a flow diagram on how this might affect things like communication and coordination errors, and then reductions in quality or poor health outcomes. And there's often trade-offs in these issues between better access and possibly some reductions downstream. So that's really the setup. The unit of analysis I should be really careful of, and this is something that in conversations with VIREC, we struggled with, and they asked me to reiterate with you. If you end up talking to other researchers about this, there are many different units of analyses out there, and it can be very, very confusing because you'll see, for example, that there could be hundreds of thousands of authorizations. These things can happen. You can get many authorizations for a person. You can get referrals. You can get appointments. You can get appointments that have been canceled. You can get actual visits, and then you get paid claims. So if you end up talking to folks, try to figure out that you're using the same vernacular so that you're not confusing each other. As a health economist, I really like paid claims. I like paid claims because they represent services that were actually done and paid. But keep in mind that there might be delays in the pay. And so I might be excluding some services because I'm only looking at those that show up as being paid. So here's an analysis that Megan led on the early evidence of the choice in fee care. And these, again, are just the paid claims. What you'll see is that there's a trade-off clearly in the specialty care area. That's where a lot of these fee programs were in the past, and we see a slight downtick in 2015 in the first 6 to 8 months after the choice program was enacted, and a bump up in the fee and choice. What you don't see here that's hard to see because of our y-axis here. So the y-axis is visits among, this is a subset. So this is the OEF, OIF, OND users of EHA care, and your x-axis is your years, is primary care. So traditionally, fee services were not used for primary care. They were only used for these things that you would need outside, like I mentioned, the oxygen. And we're seeing an uptick now in the primary care. So that might be greatly exciting to you. It might be greatly unnerving to you. That perhaps depends on your perspective. But that is something that's clearly new with choice. To give this a little bit more perspective, as I mentioned, in 2013, the fee care accounted for approximately 11% of the medical care appropriation. So we were spending about 11% of VHA medical care dollars on fee basis. Fast forward a couple of years, we're now spending about a third of our medical care appropriation on fee basis and choice care. And this is, I haven't actually seen the data, so I won't say that I verified it. This was just passed on from our Office of Community Care folks. But clearly, there has been a huge emphasis on developing these networks, ensuring that veterans are getting choice care, great interest in making sure that they're getting high-quality choice care and so forth. So that's been a fundamental change in the way that VA has operated. So a little bit on the data that we've started to get on right now. And what I'm going to ask people to do, I'm going to come up in a second to a questions and answer slide. So if you have questions, feel free to type them into your message. And like I said, we can defer them if they're bigger type questions, or we can come back to them if they are broad questions that we want to answer in person. So we've been spending a fair amount of time looking at utilization data. I'm going to give you some information on the TPA monthly choice, which is going to give you some information on referrals and appointments, the paid claims coming out of the fee-based claim system, and then it's this PIT system, which is the expedited payment system. I will note that there are other data on choice, and most notably for veterans' experience, the survey of veterans, so SHEP, Joe Francis and Megan, what's his name, Mike? I'm spacing on his name that manages the data, so I apologize.
Mark Maturko. Oh.
Mark Maturko is one of them. Yeah, Mark and
Jim Schaefer.
I'm spacing on, yes, so thank you. So their group has been working very hard to get these SHEP data. Thank you, Amy. So if you're interested in other data, we're not going to be speaking much about the veterans' experience here, but just to note that they exist and you can work to get access to them. We're mostly going to be talking about the utilization data going forward. So just to note, any questions about the background of VACA, so this is the VA Choice Act or the VA the Veterans Choice Program, you can type those in if you have questions about sort of the broad background. There has been a lot of interest in what's happening. So in the first year, if you'll notice, if I go back in time, you said VA Choice Program goes through 17. We're clearly not in 17 anymore. And so there has been authorizations and bills signed that enable us to continue spending the money that was unspent. But there are at least, to my knowledge, two or three different bills running through Congress right now that would be variations of the Choice Program. I've heard one which is called the CARES Program, which would eliminate some of these mileage and hardship restrictions as well as the distance and wait time restrictions to make it easier for veterans to access these care. It remains to be seen which one Congress is going to put forth, if any. So that remains to be seen. Okay, so let's jump into some data. So that's probably what you're all here for. So I'm going to give a little bit of brief overview on the VACA tables, and then I'm going to pass the baton to Megan for the fee and fee basis claim system. So here's the VACA table. So this is coming through, and I have the link at the bottom of the page, so you can go to the link and you can see there's a lot of SQL tables that sort of get built together here. We first initially started focusing on what I've circled here, which I think of as the TPA monthly choice tables. And you can see that there are some information here on Social Security numbers, so you can identify the person, clinics, flags, and so forth. So originally, when we started digging into these data, there were 26 different VACA data tables. According to the BISL folks, two are now currently active in the VA corporate data warehouse, and there have been a lot of efforts to develop and build systems. So if you're starting to work in these data, you have to understand that these are very, very live data sets. And by live, I mean they're just changing almost every minute. But we were trying to figure out, could we use the VACA tables to understand who was getting authorizations and visits to the care? So this is it's a really interesting data set for describing the administrative processes. It's probably the data set you want to go to if you want to understand this process, for example, the wait times, if there has been an appointment that was then rescheduled. You'll see all that detail here. What's harder is you don't see the actual visit date and that the visit was completed. So if you're interested in dates, wow, there's a lot of date information here. And you can go through and you can start tracking down this. And, you know, what Virek and we did initially was trying to understand, can you walk through specific patients? There are some very specific cases where they're very straightforward. And you can say, yes, there was a authorization for this patient to get what looks to be OT, occupational therapy, and you can see the visits and other information there. And you can then say, I suspect that it was carried out. There are other times where you can see that the dates were changed, it was rescheduled. It's a little bit hard to sort of piece these things together. So in the end, we ended up working more with the fee basis data that Megan's going to talk to you about. We had a hard time knowing if a visit was completed. I should note that there's no clinical information in here, so you don't see, for example, diagnostic or procedure codes because it wasn't a visit. This is the lead up to a visit, if you will. At this point, it's the best way to link the other data sets is not clear. I should say that this is where Virek has been spending most of their time, is trying to link these VACA data to other data so that you can say, hey, we see this buildup, we see these sequences, now let's link them to the clinical information. So Lucy has been working very hard at Virek to do that. Again,
Todd, I'm sorry to interrupt just a second. We have a question. What does TPA stand for?
TPA. That is, I've always just called it TPA. Megan or Amy?
Third-party administrator. So this is the data from HealthNet and TriWest, who the VDA contracted with as third-party administrators or TPAs to help administer the CHOICE program. So they are actually sending data back to VA, the third-party administrators are, which populates the VACA table.
Thank you for that reminder. Amy, were you going to say something? Did I cut you off? No, okay. And you can actually see, there are actually information on who is the TPA, the third-party administrator who's entering the data and so forth. But just to note that these data sets are changing all the time. They're adding new variables, so you can easily say, that looks like a great variable. And then you realize that it was probably recently added, and there's just lots of missing information. So when I say that there's relatively complete information, when we pulled some data back in May, you can see that we were looking at about 6.6 million records. And what was always complete was the contractor. So you can see information on who was doing the TriWest, the HealthNet. The authorization numbers, are important because that determines who's paying for the care. So there's special pots of money for authorizations that are choice authorizations versus fee authorizations. So you can parse that out. You have information on fiscal year. You have the imported date into the database was always there. And the last day of the weekly reported period was always there. There was regions and the VA Medical Center who issued authorizations to authorize care. So these were very complete data. There are some less complete data. So, and I have percent missing on your right. So the information on preferred dates. So you can think a lot of these as being missing for different reasons. One is that there are new variables added to the data set, or alternatively, because they are only when the person had a preferred date, or there was changes to the record. So there's a lot of times where you're trying to make sense of these things, but if it was a very simple authorization, some of these details would be missing. But you can see that the date of the last appointment code, the name health insurance, these are largely missing when you look across these 6 million records from May. Now, I should say that these might have really improved over time, so I can't say anything about the past few months in these. So just a quick summary of TPA Monthly Choice. As a health economist who's really interested in paid claims, I was a little bit less interested in this because I was struggling to make sense of, okay, so when do these authorizations turn into a completed visit, turn into a payment? So this data set has lots of information on the administrative processes. There's no clinical or diagnostic information. You're not seeing ICD-9 codes because you're going to see that in the fee-based claims data. I would say that this is a hard data set to use without some help. And so even conversations with Virek and our team, we struggled with this, but my hope is that Lucy and the Virek team has made further progress working with these data. All right, so we're Heidi, we're going to transfer over to Megan at this point, who's going to – she has been really the hero leading the fee and fee-based claim system data. So do I release that or do you? Looks like we're waiting to view Megan's screen. So, Megan.
Yeah, can you see it now?
Yes.
Yes, I get it.
Wonderful. So thank you, Todd, so much for kicking this off. And as Todd mentioned, we're going to transition now to talk a little bit about the claims data. So a little bit of background on fee and the fee-basis claim system. So yes, there are actually two different fee-named data sets that you can look at. Both the fee and the fee-basis claim system, or FBCS, were developed to track VA's purchased care, both for payment purposes and also for clinical information purposes. So Todd was mentioning that a lot of the data associated with authorizations, et cetera, doesn't obviously have that clinical information. But we do have in the fee and FBCS data clinical information, the usual variables that you typically see in administrative claims. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the process in fee within the VA first and then talk about these data sets a little bit more. So non-VA providers submit claims for reimbursement to local fee offices that are associated with various individual or a group of VA facilities. And the staff at the fee offices put claims through a claim scrubber that checks to see if the claim was authorized and to identify possible errors or inconsistencies in the data, which the fee staff then review to check what results they get from that claim scrubber. And claims are processed through the FBCS system, and this is a SQL server-based system, and there are actually many SQL servers throughout the U.S. So different VA data feeds into different servers, which are then aggregated in the corporate data warehouse. And the VA contracted out to set up this fee-basis claim system to Document Storage Systems, or DSS. And they are primarily responsible for the structure of FBCS itself, but VA communicates regularly and has a team who does that on what is going in and what data is coming out of FBCS. Most of the data that are put in through fee also show up in FBCS, but there are some variables, such as the category of care variable, which we use in our work and I'll talk about more, that only exist in FBCS. So while there's more data in fee and less in FBCS, there are actually some in general, there are some specific variables that are quite useful that are only available in FBCS. So not all claims are processed in FBCS. For example, unauthorized claims and community nursing home claims are not processed in that system. So for our projects, we decided the best approach was to link fee and FBCS data to evaluate comprehensive data on utilization. The FBCS existed prior to the Veterans Choice Program. So we just wanted to note that it was not designed specifically for the Veterans Choice Program, but rather it was designed for purchase care in general. And it takes a minimum of 7 days for a paid claim to show up in the system. Most claims are processed within 2 years, but it can take more time for certain claims to be submitted and processed, and those are the outliers. As I mentioned before, FBCS does not house all the data for all paid claims, and I'll give another example of this in a few slides when I talk about how lump sum payments were controlled and show up in the PIT data, which again I'll cover in a little bit. There is an obligation number, it's a variable in fee and FBCS, which allows you to identify choice claims versus other purchase care programs. And there's also the variable special PROVCAT, which has a value of choice, and box 5 on the claims that are submitted from the providers, and that has a tax, box 5 includes the tax ID, which differentiates between HealthNet or TriWest, the third-party administrators for choice, which we discussed before. We have found a lot of missingness in special PROVCAT and in box 5, but we've had a lot of success using the obligation number, and I'll talk about that more, and that helps us to identify choice versus traditional fee claims. So I'll be talking next about the types of service. When you're analyzing data across healthcare systems, you have to use different variables to understand the type of care that's provided. In VA, we're familiar with using clinic stop codes for type of care. And in Medicare and other systems, type of care is a little bit harder to define. So we have used, and many other researchers have used, the Berenson-Eggers type of service, or BEDOS, which aggregates procedure codes such as CPTs or HCPCS into BEDOS categories. And those BEDOS categories can be combined with provider taxonomy, or which is a specialty information about a provider, to further specify the type of care provided. And this work was kind of at first led by Jim Burgess, and you really do need to combine the specialty information with certain types of care with the CPTs and HCPCS because, for example, you can have an evaluation and management visit, and that can occur with a primary care provider or a specialist, so it's necessary to have information about the provider in order to tell which kind of service is actually being provided. But for choice and other purchase care, there is a variable called category of care. And this assigns a type of care both at the authorization time point and also when the care is delivered. But you can also use BEDOS and provider information from claims to classify care if you so choose in the fee and FBCS data. So a little bit more on the category of care variable. It is a variable used to describe type of care. For example, some of the values that you'll see are cardiology, primary care, and it's used both for the choice program and for all purchased care as well. There are currently 161 values for category of care in the VACA tables that Todd talked about in the corporate data warehouse, and 140 values in FBCS. The reason that there are more values in the VACA tables is because, as I mentioned, the third-party administrators are actually feeding that table. And we have noticed when analyzing the data that they're manually entering some of the category of cares, so they're duplicative. So it might be that ophthalmology is spelled incorrectly in one spot and spelled correctly in another, so you end up with two categories of ophthalmology instead of one. So it's important to look at that if you end up using the VACA category of care data, because you'll have to do some recoding in order to put everything in the correct bucket. So the category of care is assigned by VA staff when care is authorized and sent out into the community, and it's also assigned by the TPAs when care is delivered. So to understand utilization patterns in both traditional fee and in choice, our research team is currently examining purchase care utilizations for outpatient care. and we'll be looking at inpatient care soon. In addition to looking at category of care, we're examining procedure codes and provider information, as I described on a previous slide. We've noticed some CPTs or procedures are typically associated with inpatient care are actually showing up in the outpatient data. So we just wanted to note in this presentation today a couple data anomalies that we've noticed, and to also mention that it's important to do really thorough analyses of these data to make sure they're clean for your analysis purposes. We also happen to see a high use of the code GEO165, which is a code for an aid for home health or hospice care. This might signify overuse of this code nationally, regionally, or locally, or it could be totally appropriate use of that code. So we're actually looking into this more. At this point, we're just going to pause, and I'll ask Heidi if there are any questions coming up about the fee or FBCS data before I get into the PIT data.
Hey, Megan.
We do have several pending.
Yeah. Go ahead, Heidi.
What was that, Todd? No, we do have several pending questions out here, but they came in a little bit earlier.
Okay.
So I don't know if we want to look at any of these now or hold them a little bit.
Can you remind me how I can see them, Heidi, so that I can, as we're going along, I can help manage this?
Yeah, I'll give you access to them.
Oh, thank you. And we actually were working on some of these analyses yesterday, and one of the things that we just did yesterday that I was going to add, we don't have a slide on it right here, is we started digging into the choice, when choice was mental health, the category of care and the choice data was mental health, were we seeing mental health CPT codes? And the most reassuring thing there is in 96% of the cases, the CPT codes were consistent or plausibly related to mental health. So that is really good news if you're a mental health researcher. It looks like the category of care is highly accurate. We did see about 1% of the records were occupational therapy CPT codes. So we're feeding that back to the OCC folks, and we did that last night so that they can, if they're focused on helping to improve the data, that they can do so. That's the kind of stuff we're starting to dig into, and we'll continue to let you guys know about that. Sorry, Megan.
Thanks for adding that, Todd. Okay, so it sounds like, Heidi, we can probably take the questions at the end. And I just have a few more slides, so we should have plenty of time. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about this, the program in, integrity tool, or PIT. And I wanted to kind of take a step back and say, how did we discover that PIT exists? So our team was analyzing choice data for fiscal year 2015, 2016, and 2017. And we noticed that the FY 2016 and 17 numbers for utilization did not seem accurate when we knew that the program had been expanding. So we discovered that some lump sum payments were being made to choice providers to expedite payments. And these payments were not showing up in the fee or FBCS data. But they are available in the program integrity tool, or PIP, along with other non-lump sum payments just made through the usual payment system. PIP is an IBM product, and it was purchased by VA and aggregates many sources of data and allows for additional checking for fraud, waste, and abuse. So other non-research teams are looking into that as well. And we wanted to note that there are elevated privileges in order to access PIT. You have to go through the EPAS system, and your supervisor has to provide information such as when your background check was completed, et cetera. But if you're looking for a comprehensive data source on all choice utilization, this is really the data set that you have to go to now. We are providing here an example using colonoscopy data to describe better the phenomenon I was talking about, where patterns of data didn't seem to make sense when we looked at it longitudinally. So this is an illustration of how FBCS data is impacted by the emergence of PIT, while the 718 colonoscopy visits should be accurate for fiscal year 2015, you can see a drastic decline in total colonoscopy visits in FY 2016 in the far right column, and under the choice visits column, only one visit for a colonoscopy in fiscal year 2017, which is, of course, unrealistic. So gaining PIT access at this point in time is critically important to get a complete picture of utilization. And but I did want to know that the CDW team is working to get PIT into CDW, and we will, of course, update everyone when that becomes available. So we have requested access to PIT data, but if you have any specific questions about that, we'll have to address it at a future cyber seminar because we haven't started analyzing that data yet. A little bit of advice from our experience. It takes a lot of time and attention to detail to navigate the many sources of choice data. And our partners and the Office of Community Care are very busy, so it's really important for all of us to share information across operations and research projects. And so we are looking forward to collaborate with a lot of people and looking forward to everyone else's discoveries about this data. And the data is not currently at a point where you should give yourself short timelines for projects, because you will end up seeing some interesting things in the data that you will need to work with operation partners to understand. We've hit some dead ends along the way, but we've also luckily been able to turn a lot of them into small wins and figuring out what data is best for our purposes. For example, we try to link the UB92 or the CMS claims forms data to FBCF data to try to improve our identification of choice claims. So we wanted to make sure that we were getting the full universe of choice utilization. Values for that special PROC-CAT variable I spoke about ended up being missing 93% of the time, and only 0.94% of records were approved choice claims. So as I mentioned before, we ended up using obligation number to identify choice claims, and that has been a really good variable for us. And it's one that the CBO uses as well. So next steps, HERC is supporting the data documentation efforts for our Palo Alto, Boston, Salt Lake City team. And both HERC and VIREC are developing data documentation and will work to coordinate the dissemination of this information. And now Todd and I would love to answer any questions, and Amy Rosen has joined us as well. So please let us know what questions you might have.
Yeah, and we're going to try to thank you so much, Megan. We're going to try to do something a little bit different here, which is usual than what we normally do, which is normally you would type something in. And so Heidi is going to open the phone line. So for this to work, we ask for your patience. Please don't put us on hold, and please mute yourself if you're not talking. Otherwise, we're going to hear music or hear other background noise, and it's not going to work. I'm going to start with a couple questions that people had started by writing in, and then we can get to the phone lines. One has to do with Gene Yoon asked the question, do the fee-basis claims records for inpatient physician services have a field for hospital inpatient facilities? So as we have mentioned, we are seeing inpatient data in the outpatient fee-basis claims system data sets. What we think is happening is that's being captured because of the CPT code, but you would want to then pull out inpatient care. And I'm getting some background noise. It looks like it's Cliff. So, Cliff, if you could keep your background noise down, that would be great. So there was a question about how do we obtain a copy of this slide deck. That's an easy one. Heidi is the manager of all things related to this slide deck, so we can easily get to that data. Are there other questions that people want to ask directly?
I'm through about H right now unmuting people, so if your first name is later than H in the alphabet, I'm not quite to you yet, but I'm getting through them as quickly as I can.
Awesome. was a question about data access, and Paul asked a question about, who has access to these data, and what about doctoral students? So the data that we've talked about all reside on the CDW, so you should have access to the data if you have access to the CDW. So folks who are academic affiliates and so forth could access these with appropriate, without compensation approvals and so forth. So that is possible.
I have a question.
There was a question. Go ahead.
I was wondering, this might have been covered, if so I apologize for missing it. Is there a way to speak to students who are to choice the student after the show yet?
Was that Elizabeth? I was having a hard time hearing you.
Yeah, sorry.
Elizabeth, do you mind repeating the question?
Is there a way to see if people have been referred to students that haven't actually gone yet to see the care provider? So they're sort of still waiting?
So you can look at referrals in the back of tables.
How would you let me know, okay?
It's very difficult, as Todd was mentioning.
Now, as far as those full questions that we usually ask your wife, should I send those to her, or is she available for me to talk to you now?
Hey, Peggy, can you mute yourself? Thank you.
So what I was saying is that you basically can get it's very difficult to link one-to-one between DACA and the FBCS claims data to see that somebody actually and you would need to be able to see if they actually received the service in order to tell whether or not they actually ended up not applying. And then you also need to obviously give yourself a hotline to be confident that the claim is in the claim. As I mentioned, sometimes several years before that comes back, but you could give yourself a reasonable amount of time. Say within this period of time, somebody did not actually end up getting care, you would have a better idea of somebody getting it or not actually utilizing it. But there's no variable that specifically indicates that. It would take data linking. One important thing is that starting in 2018, is that there are unique identifiers that are associated with the data, which allow you to walk through the authorization, the utilization point for specific patients. And that's really helpful because, as you mentioned, it was tremendously difficult to try to link any DACA to FBCS data. And this allows you to follow the patient through that through the course of getting a referral to actually utilize the care.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Again, we're getting a lot of feedback, so if other folks have are not asking questions, if they can mute themselves, that'd be hugely helpful. There was a question that got typed in on patient zip codes and their interest in rurality.
Well, that's
my memory on the fee-based claims data system is that you're going to be able to link these to the person using scrambled Social Security number or real Social Security number, so you can see where these people are.
Okay.
Yeah, and we typically, as I was saying, we typically use PSSG files for highly rural, rural, or urban information on the patient level.
There's another question. Hey, Heidi, with all the feedback, maybe you can just mute again, and then people can type in their questions. I think it's people are preferring to type in, and then we can read them.
If I can do that. There we go.
Right.
How do we still have you out here?
I'm still here, Megan.
Oh, I just realized Todd had called in, and I don't think he put his audio pin in, so he's in as just a phone call. So when I muted everyone's lines, it muted Todd. Todd, you will need to put your audio pin in to be unmuted. Sorry about that, everyone. But while we're waiting for Todd to get back on, let me grab one of these questions here. This one actually is for Megan. Megan, you had a slide that referred to C and C plus choice separately. Are these mutually exclusive categories?
I think they are referring to, let me go to the slide. Can you still see my computer?
Yes, we can.
Okay, so sorry for the quick clicking through. But I bet they were talking about this slide, which Todd presented. So what you can see in the upper bar is the fee and choice. So that means that, and then the lower bar is just fee utilization. So the lower part is just showing traditional fee, all of the purchase care programs that existed prior to choice. And then the upper part, so if we look at specialty care, the red is fee only. And if we look at specialty care, the green is for both traditional fee and choice utilization. So the difference in distance between those bars is actually, you can attribute that to utilization within the choice program. So hopefully that answers the question.
Great, thank you. Todd's looking for his pin. He should be back in just a moment. But I'll just go to the next question here while we're waiting. For doctoral students interested in using choice data for their dissertations, which department or office is best suited for assisting in data collection or management?
Can you read the last part? Which office?
Which department or office may be best suited for assisting in data collection or management?
So it sounds a little bit to me like they're interested in primary data collection. And if they are interested, if a doctoral student is interested in primary data collection, you know, I would think it would be important to work with the operations partners of the Office of Community Care to understand what needs there are and in order to, A, make sure that that data is not already being collected, and B, that it will actually be useful for operations and research purposes. But if they just are looking at secondary data, you know, all of that's going to be in the corporate data warehouse minus the PIT slides I went over, and they would go through the regular DART data access process in order to get authorization in order to access that data. But I do think there's also a lot of existing data sets that maybe a doctoral student could tap into instead of creating something new.
And this is Amy. Just to add to that, there are the SHIP data sets that are surveys of patients, selected surveys of patients who have used choice data. So those might be available as well.
Okay, Todd is still trying to call in. We're trying to get on the phone line here. I can move on to the next question while we're waiting here. Are you aware of any nationally available reports which will track success metrics for community care?
I would go to the community care website to see what has been posted. That office is doing a lot of work to track metrics in community care and how well they're doing. They're also, the Office of Community Care has also rolled out a number of tools to actually aid with care coordination and other really important factors. And so those are pretty recently implemented tools, and so a lot of the data from that won't be back yet, but the Office of Community Care is doing a lot of work to look at quality and utilization as well. But I'm not aware of a nationally available report currently that really runs through all of the different metrics that would be important for understanding how choice is being utilized and if it's being utilized in the best way possible.
Yeah, and just to echo Megan, I think it's really in the early stages, and they're just developing the metrics now.
Hey, guys, sorry, this is Todd. Oof, sorry about that.
More questions.
Yeah, so there's a question that... I'll keep going. There's a question on data dictionaries. Are they available for all of the variables? This is actually one of the things that Vyrek and Herc are going to work on. There are no data dictionaries for any of this stuff. So it really is through brute force and crowdsource. One of the reasons we wanted this call was so that if other folks are working these data, we can learn from you and each other. When you start to dig into the questions of, is the data there? Is it missing? As we were working with data sets, new variables would appear. You work on a data set 1 week and the next week a new variable would be there. So it clearly is very live and dynamic. And I think that we're just going to have to start building data sets. One of the things that Vyrek and I are struggling with is developing much faster guidance than a guidebook or what we think of as sort of a traditional variable listings, so that you guys can start working with the data much faster. There's a question that's on where the data sets are. They on the CDW raw or production servers?
They are
Megan,
on the
can I
ask you? Yes, they're on the CDW raw, so the AO6 server.
And then another question that Jim asks is, can you differentiate mileage choice use versus wait time choice use?
Great question. So that's pretty complicated. What we have done, and the method is described a little bit, I think, in the paper that's actually up on the screen now, in medical care. So in the VACA tables, there's an eligibility code variable. I think it's elig_code that indicates whether an individual veteran is eligible through wait time, mileage, hardship, or a combination, or just has basic eligibility, meaning that they're enrolled in the VA but don't fall into those distance or time categories. And so if you use the patient-level information from the VACA tables on the eligibility, then you can associate that with individual visits and know that visits for that individual are related to being eligible for a particular category. The one caveat is, and we've talked about this quite a bit on this call, is that the data is living. And so in the VACA tables, information about an individual is replaced. So if a veteran was originally eligible due to wait time, but then ended up moving and became eligible because of distance later on, then you would only see the distance eligibility, which would have replaced the original wait time eligibility. So there's a little bit of, there's issues with understanding over time why a veteran was receiving care through choice. And so you kind of have to assume over a given period of time that they're eligible for a different reason, unless you keep on downloading and saving and downloading and saving data at different time points.
Great. Thanks, Megan. That was my memory, too, and I think it's probably still the same case. Just a clarification, Claudia just wanted to remember that the fee is distinct from the fee-basis claim system, which is true. The fee is local. It's a VISTA system, whereas fee-basis claim system is a national system that pulls from the local. Did you want to add anything to that, Megan? You were the one who quickly reviewed that on the slides.
No, that's great. And hopefully on the slide, I succinctly said that fee is the VISTA and also kind of had to describe that the use of the term national for FBT ads is a little bit broad in the sense that there are a bunch of SQL servers, over 30 SQL servers throughout the U.S. that all get pulled into FBCS. And so there are multiple facilities that feed into any given SQL server. And then all that data is aggregated into the FBCS data and CDW. So thank you very much for that comment, Claudia, and hope that helped to clarify.
And then there's a really interesting question here, which is, have the third-party administrators been tracking any data they might share with VHA? And that was Eric's question. So I will say that there's two requirements that are supposed to happen when the third-party administrators, to my knowledge, get involved with the data. One is that they're supposed to help with the, you know, the information that gets put in there to get the person linked to a referral so that the patient can go out to a system. There's also supposed to be then the prodding so that the clinician then puts the data back into a separate clinical portal. So you can say, we see a patient went to community emergency room for suspected stroke. They did a CAT scan. Here's that information that goes back to the portal. There might be other things that the third-party administrators are doing. We haven't communicated with them. We don't know specifically. There's been a lot of discussion on the Office of Community Care about setting up contracts and revising contracts. So we've just been working with the Office of Community Care. We haven't had any discussions with the third-party administrators themselves. But there's a lot going on there, too.
We do know
anything you want to add, Megan or Amy, on that?
I just wanted to add that in discussion with some of the local community care offices, they're getting records of veterans who have used community care that are scanned into the VISTA systems in VA. And so that's another way to get the community care information.
There's another question, which is there any way to track veterans who attempt to use choice but are never authorized? That was Tom's question. So there is, I will note that in the VACA table, so that would put you into the VACA tables, there is pre-authorized and unauthorized, which sounds bad. It sounds terrible, but it's just not pre-authorized data. So you could be a veteran who's seeking choice without necessarily a consult or referral, and you would be considered unauthorized. You can see all that data in the VACA. What you have a harder time seeing is, was the visit completed? When was the date completed? What was the service for? And so that makes it much harder to use those data. And so that's one of the reasons we ended up using the few basis claims system. Megan or Amy, did you want anything to add anything about authorized versus unauthorized data in the VACA tables?
No, that's great. We also had a question earlier about, you know, tracing that all the way to utilization. So I covered that component. So thanks for covering the unauthorized, authorized part.
And just to note, as Megan mentioned earlier, there are a couple types of care that are not choice because they're covered by the Millennium Bill. The Millennium Bill was passed 18 years ago, and it deals with emergency care services and nursing home services. And so if you go to an emergency room and it's unauthorized, that's not considered choice care per se. And so it's more likely to get paid out of the fee basis data or fee basis obligations, not necessarily the choice obligations. Any other questions? So here's the request for you folks. If you're still on and you're still working with the data, can you email us and let us know that you're working with the data so we can build a community of colleagues that are using the data and that we can, you know, maybe ping you for questions or send out clarifications if you want to. You can send it to, you know, todd.wagner@va.gov, or you can send it to herc@va.gov, or, you know, Megan and Amy are also in the Outlook as well. I think we're right at the top of the hour, so then maybe that's the perfect timing for this. Heidi?
Fantastic. So I really want to thank Todd, Megan, and Amy for taking the time for this. We really do appreciate you presenting today. For the audience, I want to thank everyone for joining us. When I close the meeting out in a moment, you will be prompted with a feedback form. Please take a few moments and fill that out. We really do appreciate all of your feedback, and we do have to report that back to the VA for our session, so we really do appreciate and need your feedback. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar, and we look forward to seeing you at a future session. Thank you.